Okay, everybody, it's Michael E. Cullen II.
And I'm Sesame Incarta from the All Too Real 2 podcast. We're passionate about movies, TV, and pretty much all things pop culture.
Dive into the chaos of failed sitcoms, direct-to-video sequels, and the quirky realms of cinema and TV.
Join us every Thursday for your dose of All Too Real 2 entertainment.
We'll guide you through debates like whether Howard the Duck qualifies as a superhero.
Ponder if Larry the Cable Guy could be the new Rock or Schwarzenegger.
Discover if some shows and movies should have stayed in the cutting room.
Ever heard of a sitcom featuring that dictator with the funny mustache? Well, we watched it.
We're dedicated to unraveling the peculiarities of pop culture, sometimes with awesome guests.
So, if you're into the eccentric world of pop culture,
listen and subscribe to All Too Real 2.
Available wherever you find podcasts
and on Age of Radio.
In a movie, certainly. In real life, it's much sadder.
And he gets +3 heart, +2 balls.
And I did have it put in my notes, ask Jeremy if this is what a Battle of the Bands actually is.
That was the clincher.
But no, actually, I'm very simple to songs about how much I don't like bacon.
Hello, and welcome to Movie Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash through a movie whose source material is from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hi, this is Jeremy Parmentier of the Retrovaniacs podcast and also the band Subtastics. I'm dangerously close to being Scott Pilgrim.
I think you are the perfect host to join us for this one, Jeremy. And our guest host this evening is Rick DeRee.
Hey, guys. Glad to be here. Founder of the Heroic Awards and also launching Kickstarter Halloween Night Vigilante Combat. We'll talk about it later. It's awesome indie fighting game.
And our movie this evening is 2010 Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, starring Michael Cera, Mary Winstead, and Kieran Culkin, directed by Edgar Wright.
Come to this Battle of the Bands thing.
You have a band.
Yeah, we're terrible.
One, two, three, four! Mr. Pilgrim!
I'm Ramona's first evil ex-boyfriend.
What?
Wait, we're fighting over Ramona?
Didn't you get my email explaining the situation?
I skimmed it. Scott Pilgrim!
Prepare to feel the wrath of the League of Evil Exes.
Ramona dated twins.
If you want something bad, you have to fight for it. Step up your game, Scott.
Combo!
So, before we jump into this movie, so Rich, why'd you pick this movie for us?
You know, there's a whole bunch of comic books turned into movies, what have you, but I have got to bust the balls of all my fellow local comic shop guys here, and I gotta say, I love the manga comic duplex of what you're getting with Scott Pilgrim. I love how it has this kind of manga art, this kind of like, foreign-ish feel to the comic. And then when I watched the movie, they did a pretty good job bringing it to the screen. So I had to talk about it. A lot of my comic guys, they're like hardcore into, you know, the traditional American comics. But I go both ways, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I find people either love or hate this movie coming from the comic book world.
Yeah.
So were any of you familiar with the original source material?
I had not read it. I knew it was I thought it was a comic, but it's trade, you know, a bunch of trades. I had not read it though, before this came out. Everyone kind of said, oh, you know, I read these, you'll love this movie. It's going to be amazing when it comes out. So I knew it was based on a manga, but I did not actually read it at the time.
Yeah. I had read it. I'd read the first couple of volumes. I didn't go through all six because it got a little bit, you know, I don't know. I want to say kiddish, but teen, a little bit too teen for me. But I mean, that's, again, it falls right into the manga genre in that regard. So slice of life. Fun, quirky, yeah.
I had never read this. That seems to be a common thread with these movies lately. But I think this is a good refresher for us because we've just come off of doing Cemetery Man and what was the one before that? Oh, Old Boy. So I think this is a good refresher movie compared to the past ones we've been having. So I'm assuming this was not your guys' first viewing of this movie.
Right, yeah. I'd seen it maybe 3 times.
It was recommended to me when it was new. I didn't see it in the theater, but I saw it when it was out, you know, on DVD, I guess, afterwards. The problem I had when I saw it the first time was everyone was telling me how great it was and how much I would enjoy it. And unfortunately, that means that I'm probably not going to like something. Not because I don't want to like things people tell me to like, but you build it up too much. You know, if you say, hey, this movie's amazing, you got to see it. And then you watch it, you're like, it's not what I expected. You made it sound like it was going to be something I would love. And instead, I just kind of enjoyed it. The same thing happened to me with the movie Hot Rod. First time someone told me to see Hot Rod, I was like, yeah, you know, I think I'll like it. They're like, oh, yeah, it's totally your kind of humor. And I watched it, and I left thinking, like, this was the dumbest movie I've ever watched. Like, there were some funny parts, but I didn't enjoy it. However, that movie I've watched over and over again since, and it's funnier every time. There's some new little thing I pick out. I'm like, this is actually right up my alley. So I tried to rewatch this time with a more open mind, not think of it as someone telling me that I'd love it, but try to come at it again and pretend it was the first time I've seen it.
Well, if this is your first time joining us, just a heads up, we're going to be discussing the plot of this movie and may discuss several elements that you might be considered spoilers, so consider yourself warned. So, Rick, why do you do us a favor, just walk us through the plot of this movie?
Yeah, well, you got it right. Scott Pilgrim, post-high school, kind of a slacker from Toronto, had that international vibe, plays bass in a local garage band, so I'm a huge fan of that. He's dating random chicks and just, like, passing the time. It's cool, I guess, but at 23, dating a high schooler still, it's a little bit lame, I guess. But the main plot kicks off when he has this vision, you know, a total dream sequence where he has this chick going by in her rollerblades, and I guess that's his next-to-be ex-girlfriend. I don't know. She's kind of a dud, in my opinion, not to spoil that one, but kind of spoiled it, Ramona Flowers. But he falls in love with her at first sight, obviously, and to get her, he has to, you know, defeat seven evil exes, video game style, and all the different comic bang zip, I can't write in the kisser kind of effects. It's fun. It's a different slice of life meets video game battles.
So Jeremy, does like sound like your early 20s.
Well, that's the thing. Like that's, I think, why everyone's like, oh, you'll love this. And I think it hits way too close to home. Like if I can take a step back and enjoy it for what it is and you know, enjoy the way it's filmed, like the comic and video game throughout the movie, just the angles of everything, like it looks very good. But when I watched it as, hey, man, this is kind of like about you, that's where I did not enjoy it because I don't really like Scott. I don't think Scott is supposed to be likable at first. I think you know, it is a coming of age story. So it's also a story of him kind of maturing throughout the movie to some level. But at first, you know, if that's what you thought of me at the time, I am no longer excited about seeing this movie.
Why don't we start with Scott then?
Scott was somewhat relatable. I felt like he was interesting enough. Wasn't too shallow when you couldn't put your own brand, your own hat on him. He was his own person, which was cool. It wasn't some traditional manga, you know, black haired, anybody can be this character, throw your body in the art and you're there. It wasn't like that, but also a little pretty shallow. A shallow character besides all else.
Yeah, he's 23. He's playing bass in a band. He's dating a girl who happens to be 17. He's really into video games. His friends kind of just hang out all day and do practice. I mean, that's literally what I was doing at age 22, 23. I thankfully was not dating a 17-year-old, but an 18-year-old that might as well have been 17 for a very short window of time. And even at the time, I was like, man, this is way too skeevy and weird. So it just made me feel like I don't enjoy this, Scott, but maybe that's entirely a reflection on why I didn't enjoy myself at that age. And perhaps I should talk about that in therapy. But I think in general, though, everybody else in the movie, I actually did like. Like, I like most of his friends. I like his roommate. I thought all those people were really, like, more interesting than Scott. Scott seems like kind of like a piece of paper that everyone else is writing to, as opposed to being his own character, really.
I like what you said now about the roommate, the other characters. They all are pretty unique. You know, they stand out. Even with a one or two liner, you can kind of get their personality pretty quick. The writing, I think, is top notch. It's really unique. But I think you hit it right on, Jeremy. You definitely are having an out-of-body experience here back to your 20s with Scotty Pilgrim.
He is very sort of two-dimensional, as you put it. But it's interesting you guys relate back to manga, because a manga character typically, my daughter's related to manga, where the character is overpowered typically, the main character. And Scott feels kind of weaselly until the fights begin. He seems very sort of underpowered, sort of the guy in the corner. And then all of a sudden, the video game-esque scenes start occurring, and that's when his powers come out. Now, you mentioned his girlfriend, or first girlfriend, Knives. How'd you feel about her that character and her arc over the story? Because it does change drastically from where she begins.
Yeah. Knives is sweet. She's my absolute favorite character. I would date her. I don't care if she's 17. She is awesome. She's fun. She's has a lot of emotion, but she also is a big fangirl for the band. She supports him in all the things he does. I mean, she's a perfect girlfriend. What the heck is Scott ruining this? I do not get it.
She's a perfect girlfriend, but at the same time, she's too into, like, oh, she thinks Scott's band is the coolest. She thinks, you know, all that Scott's amazing and incredible. It's almost overwhelming, and it's like there's no challenge, I guess. Not that that makes, I'm not making it, you know, that's not how I think about it. I'm just saying that's kind of the thought. But the other thing is, and you mentioned this about Ramona. We're going to talk about his, you know, new girlfriend, I guess, like the plot of the story. You said she's kind of a dud. Now, I didn't read the manga this is based on. Do you think that both in the manga and the movie, the character's kind of a dud? Or do you just think like this portrayal of the character from the manga is a dud?
Yeah, yeah. I think that both in the comic, she didn't really stand out that much. And she was portrayed really well in the show, not standing out. I mean, she kind of stood back and watched Scott do things. She stood back and watched Scott, you know, deal with his drama. And she was just on the sidelines and then gone, disappeared for 3 to 5 days. And then back again, gone again for 3 days. It just didn't seem, I don't know, it was kind of a dud to me. But what did you think? Did you love the purple, red, blue, green hair changing? Or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of right up my alley at that age. And I, in general, I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead is incredible. So it's hard to like get past that. But I also wasn't sure, like in the source material, is she kind of supposed to be, I don't want to say frumpy, but kind of less standout than I think this portrayal of the character is. But, you know, I also think, though, yes, she doesn't have, she's very aloof. She does kind of just vanish. She comes back. She's very flaky on what's going on. You know, where are these guys coming from? She doesn't tell him ahead of time, you know, oh yeah, you know, she does say, oh, I have these ex-boyfriends or X7 exes, you have to fight them, but she doesn't say who they are. And they're right. All people who are in, you know, the same kind of band circuit that he is, in the same scene that he is. One of them, the main, I guess, bad ex, and it's okay to kind of spoil these movies, right? We're past that point, Chris, is like kind of a person he's already dealing with, is like this major industry person in their area to some level, right? So there's all these things she could have said, like, oh, by the way, you know, now that the cat's out of the bag, this first guy showed up, there's going to be a bunch more of these. Here's who they are. Like, and it eventually does happen, but it's like you have to pull teeth to get anything out of her. And then it's, again, she just kind of flip-flops around. It's kind of also very much like, oh, poor me some of the time too. And you're like, not really poor you, but okay. I mean, so I can see what you're saying with the dud version of, in general, with this character. I just wasn't sure if you meant like, this portrayal is bad in the manga she wasn't, or just generally that's the kind of character she was. So that's good to know.
Yeah, I kind of see her as being the sort of the polar opposite of Knives. You know, Knives loves everything he's doing, loves his trying to put, you know, plug herself into his life. I mean, in a kind of immature way, but that's what she's trying to do. She's trying to be that supportive girlfriend, and he's pushing her back all the time because I think he knows deep down he should not be having this relationship. And the fact that he hasn't even hugged her at this point or kissed her or whatever at this, as part of the relationship. And then you have Ramona on the other side of it, where she's sort of aloof, she's disconnected, she for the longest time doesn't want anything to do with him. She shuts him down several times, so it becomes more of a challenge, I think, in his eyes. I think he's confusing aloof with cool. And even what was the character's name, the one that worked at the coffee shop, well, had a job everywhere, I forgot, that was the character that kept moving around, that kept cursing with her mouth being bleeped out all the time, was saying, don't date her, don't go after her. No, you're going to ruin everything. And I think it's because of those forces saying to him, don't do this. That's why he started pursuing her and why he gave up Knives, which, except for the age thing, she was more supportive than any girlfriend he's ever had.
Yeah, I love the, what you said, bleeping the mouth with the black square box, you know, all the quirky graphics. It reminded me a little bit of the style. I know it's not, but the style of the TV movie Speed Racer. Came out about 20 years ago, had all that flashy in your eyes, you know, make you go like strobe lights in your eyeballs. It didn't have that too much extreme, but it was still in that vein where it was psychedelic enough that like it appeased the emo Gen Z coming of age crowd in 2010, but it still wasn't too much that it distracted you. You could still get through the first three quarters of the movie without it getting a little bit redundant. So I loved the effects. It really made the movie. It made it more. I mean, so far this review, meh, you know, we're saying it's meh, but the effects really made the movie. It really made this thing stand out, and people go back and watch it again because it's fun to watch. It's like playing a video game and you enjoy it.
Yeah, I think you're right. We'll get into sort of effects later on, but I think it is more flash than substance, if that makes any sense, because it's glossy. It looks pretty, but the story's, you know, it's pretty normal. There's nothing special about it, but it's a fun watch.
I'd say the story is very simple in that it's about, you know, a guy who's trying to get this relationship off the ground. And he has to deal with her exes, right? So that's kind of normal. But then all the actual literal combat against them, right? That's where it gets into the Flash. That's where it gets into the video game and comic references and, you know, all the other way that they artistically show everything, like the band battles they have in certain parts where it's Scott and his band Sex Bomb Mom trying to fight against other bands that are, you know, of her ex-boyfriends or whatever. And it's literally like almost this CG, well, it is CG, but it's like this big giant, like Avatar fight they do through music. Like that's all great. That's all really, really good to watch. It's really fun to watch. I don't know how well that, you know, if it was as exciting in written form, but that's what makes this movie work. If I can take a step back and ignore the feeling a little sad at myself, if you can get through, you know, through that first part where you get into the combat and that's where it really hits like the video game things, the movie takes off and is really interesting take on all that.
Yeah, it definitely stands out with the battles for sure. I mean, there's lots of different ways that he ends up beating them in ways you wouldn't expect. The skateboarder battle and I mean, and the vegan battle, just all these weird, you know, cultural twists that they're from the book too. I mean, it's brought to the screen pretty well. That's really the smart writing. If we're going to get to the writing ever in this review, I think it was written really well in that effect. I think the dialogue was fine. The characters mostly were unique and gripping enough, but it was just the overall effect that won. And then that writing of the weird ways to beat the villain. I think that's what stood out to me.
Now this cast, there are a ton of future stars in this movie. Did any of them, which one surprised you the most?
Again, the first time I saw it, these things didn't stand out. I guess the one I remembered other than Michael Cera was like the big name at the time. He had done Arrested Development. Like, so, you know, I was like, okay, he's like the star. This is his movie, but there's plenty of other people. Chris Evans is in this.
Aubrey Plaza's in this.
Kieran Culkin's in this. Like, there's plenty of people who are now like bigger stars, much larger stars. So yeah, it was neat to see who else was in this. Like, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's cool. So yeah.
I'm gonna again, totally give a shaft to all my local comic book shop guys. I thought Brie Larson did great in this movie. I think she really stood out in her character. She wasn't Brie Larson. She was now the character for the only time of her career, I guess, so far. I think she did really good. I'd give her a top notch, but of course, Knives is my absolute favorite. But I think Brie did a good job. I think Chris Evans, bad role, my opinion for him. But, you know, who cares? You got like seven characters and the seven cast members who ended up playing comic book characters over the next 3 or 4 years that were in this movie. I mean, it was almost like setting the stage for the MCU to come about. That's weird. Again, weird to say. Scott Pilgrim was the first MCU movie. Done. I said it right here.
Whoever did the casting for this, I'll have to look it up at some time, they had an eye for talent. They found all these future stars before they were stars, except, of course, Michael Cera. And I think there were, what, five people that are in this movie that are now playing superheroes or in some sort of MCU project. It's a little crazy. You kind of wonder, are there other actors in Hollywood? Because these people have been in everything at this point. Speaking of Chris Evans, though, I did like, well, so why don't we jump into scenes? There's that, for the who have not watched this movie, every ex-boyfriend that you have to go through has a different fight scene, and they're all very different. Chris Evans' fight scene, I think he is the second ex he has to battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he plays an actor, so he plays effectively himself, just a actor who likes to skateboard. And he has a team of people that start the fight for him with Scott Pilgrim. Those seven people that are fighting are actually his true stunt doubles in movies he had up to that point.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is just hilarious.
Yeah, that is cool. You know, they actually did look like him. So I thought it was just casting, but actually it was his real doubles, huh?
So he, instead of just going find people that look kind of like this, hired all of his stunt doubles to do the fighting for him since they're good at fighting.
To get to that scene, this is really an important caveat. To get to where he's fighting all those doubles and he's beating them, you're like, no way this can happen. Except he actually was an ace at DDR. That was the clincher. Dance Dance Revolutions. He was the victor with Knives. That's why he knew how to fight. And if they had not brought DDR into this manga, into this comic, into this movie, you would have said, oh, this is just some kind of like OP kind of character. But in reality, you can train it back to his video game skills. I love it.
So which of the seven fighting scenes stood out to you the most?
I mean, for me, I already kind of mentioned it. I think the kind of the next to last big fight, the band battle against the two DJs, the Cotton Yagi twins, I guess, that were two people that she did before. So I guess it's five and six at the same time. That's the one that has like these two like giant dragons that they summon with their music. And meanwhile, Sex Bomb Mom like kind of kicks it off and goes crazy. And all of a sudden they have like this Yeti sort of thing and they fight in front of the crowd. It slams in everything. I don't know. That was one that stood out the most because it was like the most one. I like the band scenes in general for this. I think they're edited well. They look like videos, but like a video version of a fun concert, right? It's not like a crazy music video, but it's also not just three dudes standing there while they play. So it's a good kind of live action, you know, music video sort of thing. The band sounds good. I like the music that Sex Bomb Mom generally puts out. I mean, it's not something I'm like, oh, this is the best band ever. But, you know, if I think about music I wrote when I was 23, it ties 100%. So I'm like, yeah, this is good. They have kind of very simple, straight down to earth, kind of very punk rocky sort of sound. And so they basically just like play harder. Like that's how we're going to get better. We're going to play harder and we're going to use a pedal. And all of a sudden they just go crazy. I love it. That combat scene really stood out for me.
I do like the fact that they step it up to just step on the pedal. That just makes the music that much better. And I did have put in my notes, ask Jeremy if this is what a battle of the bands actually is.
In a movie, certainly. In real life, it's much sadder. But you know, it is bands playing against other bands to six of their friends, and it's a good time.
That is, the band is a really cool aspect to the story. I love how they have it included in there. My favorite battle, though, was when the sword pops out of his chest and he gets +3 heart, +2 balls, or whatever it is. Yeah. I mean, it brought in that gaming aspect again, but it was a big surprise. Nobody expected him to pull a katana out of his chest. So it was just, the effects were, and the surprise was, to me, the best fight scene was that last one, not Gideon. And I'm not a fan of Ramona, but the fact that he pulled a katana out of his chest and got level up, that was just cool.
I enjoy the Patel scene, the first fight.
The very first fight?
It's actually, they built it around like a Bollywood scene, and I thought that was very clever. And it was the first one because it surprises you that this is where this movie's going to go. And that's why I liked it. That's why I found it to be one of the better ones, is because it had that, you know, element of surprise to it. I mean, after that, you're expecting it. Of course, the vegan fight, I didn't expect it to end that way.
The vegan fight was so weird that the ending was appropriate.
Yes. Yep. Well, almost like a weird fever dream.
Yeah.
The whole movie's a weird fever dream.
Yeah, but that specifically, like the other ones, they all kind of flow their own with that combat feel, the video game feel. That other one is kind of like, what? But it still works because it was such a weird fight.
Well, because it ties into the writing, Rick, like you were saying, is because he has superpowers, the vegan, because he's better than you. That's it. Just because he's a vegan, he's better than you. And he loses power because he eats something that's not vegan. And that's just clever. And the vegan police show up and arrest him.
I love how he had 3 strikes of drinking milk or what have you. And that was so cool because a lot of people who claim vegan just don't even know all the ins and outs of this omni-vegan, whatever he claims to be. So it was interesting for maybe readers, maybe that some young girl who wants to be a vegan and watches this. Well, maybe it might actually get her to think a little bit more about what she's getting into. So that could be educational too, which is a good ad.
Yeah, what was his 3 violations? One was he had half an F. One was the chicken parm. And I forgot what the last one was.
Gelato.
Gelato, because like I didn't know that had cream in it.
It was egg. It had egg in it.
Which is just hilarious. What other scenes stood out to you guys?
Well, I don't know about scenes, but I, if you want to talk about some of the effects, we talked about these fights. I love the first time he has the fight with, I guess, Patel or whatever, and he does that final move on him. It looks like a video game finishing move. All of a sudden, he bursts into coins like you're playing, you know, River City Ransom or whatever. It's like, oh, $2.10. What am I going to, you know, I can't even get a bus fare with this or whatever. So, like, I love that kind of stuff. That references back to games that I was like, oh, I knew exactly what they're aiming at here. This is neat. I get all this. This is great. So that I love the first time that happens with the coins. And the fact that each boss he fights explodes into larger piles of coins and it tells him over like how much his score and total, like I guess total value or whatever would go up if these are total money or total score, doesn't matter. But the idea is it's there and each one goes up higher and higher and higher and the coin explosion is more and more offensively large. It's pretty great. I do love that effect.
And Gideon was 7 million points.
Yeah.
The final, yeah. I just couldn't stop laughing at just how far they went with the gay scene. Like he's in bed with his roommate whose boyfriend's boyfriend are all there waking up. I mean, it was just over the top and hilarious. So that was a cool little standout scene.
There are also a lot of video game references in this movie. Did anyone catch your eye?
Well, like the band names, the other band names, one band was Clash of Demon Head. That's a great NES game. And the fact his band itself, Sex Bomb Om, the Bomb Om is from the Mario games. Like all this stuff ties in with that kind of culture, the video game culture. It all screams me at 23, which is why this was a hard watch the first time. But now I've come to appreciate it a little more watching it, trying to step back. Maybe it's just I'm older now, so I feel like a little less connected than I did then.
I really liked the Zelda NES sound effects. There was a couple different Zelda game musics in there, not just from Zelda 1, but the one from Super Nintendo. And I don't know, I just really liked the sound effects dating back to the games. And I really don't remember a time before Scott Pilgrim where 80s and 90s video game sound effects were in mainstream movies. But since then, there's been a whole handful of them that have used old pixel, like 8-bit sound. But this really was a trendsetter for me, unless I'm missing something from, you know, 2002 or whatever.
I think you're right. I think after that, you have Ready Player One, you have the Pixel movie.
Yeah.
And they actually had to go out and get the rights to those Zelda sound effects, because Nintendo will sue you.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a surprise. Yeah. Nintendo was not afraid to take a lawsuit.
The music really, really did well. And now it's like total mainstream to have 8-bit music. In fact, indie video games, Vigilante Combat, indie video games are using this old 8-bit music. And when they go to Steam, you can go on Steam and get some indie game, just pick any of them, and they'll have really interesting beep-bop-boop type music, and it just throws you back in time.
So this movie runs just shy of 2 hours. Does it feel like 2 hours?
Yeah, it's a little bit long, and I think it got a little redundant. That's my opinion. Sorry if anybody who was gripped to the end.
It does take a little while even to get to those first fights, and then it does get a little repetitive, but each fight is different enough that it stood out. I don't think it felt like 2 hours. I don't think it flew by any means, but it didn't feel like, when I saw it was a 2-hour running time, I was like, oh boy. But I didn't have to stop this in the middle and do something else or take a break and come back. I watched this entirely in one sitting, actually this morning, so I can get a good reminder on it. And I did not think it was 2 hours by the time it ended, but it does have some slow moments. And if you don't enjoy the combat, if you don't kind of like the cycle that the game that this movie starts, I call it a game because it feels that way, the cycle of the movie starts, you might get bored with it about midway till you get to kind of those last two fights again.
Time-wise, I think I didn't check the clock till about an hour and 45, and I was surprised I only had a few minutes left of the movie.
It was fine. Length, I don't think that's really an issue as much as if you can enjoy the ending because of the path. If the journey was worth it, you know? And when we got to the very end, and he chooses Ramona, fine, that's happy ending, I guess. But she's just going to be another ex. But, I mean, what if he would have got back with knives? That would have been the best.
You really are leading on that whole knives thing. So let's talk about the ending. He goes through all these fights. He defeats all the exes, and Ramona's like, I'll see you later. And she decides to start leaving, and Knives is the one who actually pushes him to follow her. Did you find that to be a satisfying ending?
I didn't. The first time I watched it, I kind of thought it was an ending. Like, I don't know, not a good or bad. It was like, why would that even be the ending? But this time I watched it because, again, I tried to keep a more open mind on it. You do have, during that last fight, Scott kind of learns self-respect and some kind of self-worth. So the idea at the end is that she's going to go away and start again because she wants to, you know, she's like, I didn't get my new life, so I'm going to try again. And so it was him kind of getting that amount of self-worth to say, hey, I am going to follow you. I'm going to say, I will follow you to this new life, as opposed to, okay, I guess I'll just stay here then and hang out with Knives or whoever it is that I'm going to run into, because you don't want to be here, right? It's actually having some self-worth to say, wait, I could be that new start. So I didn't hate it this time, but the first time I saw it, I was kind of like, that's a non-ending. That's just like a thing. And then the movie ends. So this time I felt a little better about it, but I also maybe tried a little too hard to find some meaning into it. So
you got it right. There was an attempt at meaning and such, and, you know, growing up and learning from yourself. It was hard to see when he was confessing his cheating on each other, on both girls. I mean, that was in your face morals, which was great. I loved seeing that a little bit. It pulled at you a little bit. But then the girl, Ramona, just leaves him again for the fifth time in the movie, and he's still chasing after her. I mean, come on. He didn't get enough balls plus two from his katana sword.
Yeah, that was not the life lesson he learned. The life lesson was, don't cheat on your girlfriend, no matter how many you have.
Yeah.
Now, this movie leans heavily on special effects. How do you think they stood up over the past decade?
Yeah. It was, because it was like, animation slash video game effects. It wasn't, you know, you weren't trying to do Jurassic Park dinosaurs here. You were trying, or Avatar, you weren't doing that. It was gamey fun. And I don't think it's ever going to really go out. I think 20 years from now, we're still going to look back and it's going to be the same, you know, fun video gamey concept that it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I also think just the way it's shot, the way it's styled, there's a lot of imagery that's supposed to kind of look like a comic panel or like a specific scene that they're really trying to get this emotion out of. Like the even like the, there's a section where Scott and Rona go stand, you know, go to like these swings and you see their footprints up to the swings. And later on, they revisit it when he's by himself and it's just his footprints up to the swings. And you just see that like there's a lot of angles and there's the way it's shot where it's kind of shiny that even though those effects are kind of outlandish, they work. It doesn't it's not like it's a completely serious movie with these CG effect dragons that come in at any point. It looks like a shiny video game. So having these effects, I think, will hold stand up because the whole movie feels that way.
Two things for the effects for me. One, I liked the intro where it's showing their ages and their names. It made it feel very much like I'm reading some sort of comic panel where they're giving me the extra information I need to know without just saying to me the information they need to know. But I think you're right, because this movie leans heavily on retro video game styles that I think as it ages, the fact that they use retro style graphics on sort of for the special effects, they have that feel. It's going to feel more and more retro as it goes along, and that is not a hindrance to it. I think it plays more into sort of what they were going for.
Yeah, I think Jeremy got it right with the angles, the cinematography. If I were to critique it, I would say high marks on that. Much better than I expected from this kind of like straight to VHS style of a thing. Not to be rude or anything, but it just wasn't blockbuster-y. Even though the cast was amazing, I thought it did well. The cinematography was really good. Would I say that this is something I'm going to watch again? Well, I've watched it three times, so I'm sure I'll say, you know what? Put on the fun video game movie again. I might do that in 10 years. My kids liked it. They watched it with me. They thought it was cool. Again, I went right back to the manga again just to check it out real fast, and it just follows it really close. I think they did a good job. Anytime you follow the book really close, you're much more likely to hit a home run than not, in my opinion. Good on them for doing that.
And I think they use the special effects for sort of good small details, too. Like one in particular said to me, for whatever reason, when she delivers the Amazon package and she's skating away, the snow is clearing for her as she's going. I mean, Someone spent the time to think about that. Like, how do we make this work to give an idea that there's snow there? But like I said, it parts for her, like parting in the Red Sea. It's a little detail, but those are the things I appreciate the most. So I think this movie's got a lot of different themes in it. We sort of touched on Scott's arc.
I mean, Scott's arc is the bulk of this movie. It's him getting past, and I thought this was a negative at first, but now that I, you know, on the second view, I think that's kind of what he gets out of is kind of the gamifying of life and the relationship and everything else. It's not just like, oh, I met this girl and we have a lot in common and I want to start a life with her. It was like, oh, this girl is beautiful. I have to date this girl. And, you know, now it's not just a date her, but I have to beat her exes. I have to actually go up, you know, level up each time with her, right? So it's this kind of weird, almost like a quest for love that isn't necessarily love. It's like a lust quest. I don't know. It's kind of the growing out of that is what happens throughout the movie with him kind of getting that self-respect towards the end. That's all there. But that's definitely like with the video game reference and everything else, it's not just subtle. It's like in your face. Like, oh, you know, this is gamifying your relationship. And life in general, right? Trying to get a band with a bigger and bigger location, get a bigger and bigger audience, everything. It's leveling everything up, getting better points, getting better whatever. It's kind of the overfeeling, the feeling of the whole movie, really.
It was a bit isekai in that regard. You're totally right. Like living in a video game and leveling up, it's exactly what it was. And if we look at it from that perspective, if you guys have read many manga or seen much anime, the plots sometimes can be the best ever, like Death Note or what have you, but some of the plots are just silly slice of life genre. And this manga comic tries really hard to be slice of life meets isekai and be surprising, but it you can't leave the slice of life. It just doesn't leave it. So moral of the story, I don't know, grow up earlier, date again maybe, and have fun.
Yeah, Jeremy, I agree with the whole gamification of it. That is does feel like he's going through these levels, but I think you take it one step further. Ramona is the princess that's in the other castle. The princess in those older games are very two-dimensional. They're just the prize you're going for, and I think that's the way his life is going. Though he gets self-respect, though he gets confidence, though he realizes he's not necessarily the good guy in the story as he's going along, but I don't think he fully learns the lesson of what he's going after. I think if he had stayed with knives, that would be the decision. That means he's fully come around and learned those things, except for the age problem.
Maybe, but I think the other arc of this is that Ramona thinks she's having a new start in life, right? She thinks she's escaping dating a bunch of guys who are treating life like a level up, like you're in a video game, whatever. And so every time she finds out one more thing about Scott that is much like what she was in, oh, you're in a band, of course you're in a band. All right, yeah, mm-hmm. Like it's like, oh, I didn't escape at all. And so the ending being where she's like gonna try to go out and try again, and Scott is, you know, no longer in a band. He's no longer in Sex Bomb. They've replaced him with somebody else because he refused this contract or whatever, and he's become more grown up, become his own person more than he was at the start of the movie. So it's kind of like a start for both of them. Sure, they might have met in the previous cycle she was stuck in, but perhaps together they can break those cycles.
Yeah, I loved what you just said about Sex Bomb. 1, 2, 3, 4, we're Sex Bomb, we're here to make money and sell out and stuff. I mean, it was such good writing. It was so hilarious. There's little quips like that that stand out to me that make this movie worth watching again, because it's written so off the cuff, I don't know, youthful and fun and modern. So I love that part of it. I love what you also said. I'm missing here. The princess is a 2D character. Ramona definitely fits that. Maybe they tried to make her only 2D so she could be like the princess in the castle. Because you got that right on, Chris. You must have studied up for this thing or something. You must have prepared for this podcast because you knew what to say right there.
Now, one article I did actually read, not about the princess thing, but they said that all the exes, including Scott himself, represented the different seven deadly sins. I wanted to get your take on that. They say Matthew Patel, it was wrath, you know, that anger he had at the very beginning. Lucas Lee was pride. Natalie was envy. And what was it called? I'm looking at my list here.
There's the twins, though.
Yeah, there's the twins were envy. Todd was gluttony. Roxy was lust. Gideon was greed. And Scott himself was sloth.
When you explain it, I can see it, but I wouldn't pick that up.
I totally love that subtle Easter egg you just gave us. I'm going to look back on it a different way now, but totally not picking it up during the movie at all.
It's one of those things where I'm wondering if the analogy is forced onto the movie, or the actual writers thought of that while they were creating it.
Well, you know, I wrote a comic book. I'm in my third or fourth issue. I don't know how far I am right now, but I put things in my book that I can see when I read it. But I don't think anyone's going to see them. Maybe this is one of those things where the writer is a little bit vain, where it's about they want to put it in, but they do it in a way that no one knows, just because on accident, because it's too inward looking. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
I think the other thing could happen, and I've had this happen with songs. I've written songs that have a meaning to me, but I intentionally leave it vague. And then people read into what they think it means. And I hear later on, like, oh, I thought that song was about this. Like, no. Like, I mean, that, yes, I can see why you thought that. And that's cool that you would have interpreted what I said that way. But no, actually, I'm very simple. The song is about how much I don't like bacon or whatever the topic is, right? And so, like, oh, is this about the fall of communism? Like, no, not at all. It's not at all. It's about a thrift store. Like, I don't know how you read that. But I've had that happen. So maybe it's a kind of similar thing. Like, you put all these things in. Maybe it was subconscious to have those kind of seven, like, because the seven deadly sins aren't, like, unique. It's a very much, you know, pick out bad facets of humanity and name them, right? So it's pretty easy to be like, oh yeah, I'll just kind of have each person be bad, and maybe you subconsciously made them the seven deadly sins. So pretty neat.
Could you see this as the spinoff of the movie set, or which one would you say would came first?
Oh yeah, seven's later. That's what Scott Pilgrim grows up. He becomes a detective. It all goes on from there.
Wow, this got so dark just now. Happy Halloween. Yeah,
Scott's off. He's off solving murders in a city where it always is always raining. His wife gets her head chopped off and put in a box. Maybe that's Ramona's head, for all we know.
That's Ramona. Now I like the movie. I think this is a good movie. This is a really top-notch movie. I see it now.
All the pieces are coming together. So, guys, what did you love about this movie, and what could they have done better?
I mean, I love the cinematography. I love the band's aspects. I think the effects are cool. You know, the story itself, kind of as we mentioned, a little flat if you just drew it out. Here's the arc we're going with. It's pretty simple. But I don't know if I necessarily would change that. I don't know how you can build that out without making it a completely different thing.
I liked how they didn't shy away from, you know, the kissing and the romance side. A lot of the youthful mangas shy away from it. They tease it really strong, but then they don't really go there. And I think they went, the manga, both the comic and the movie, went there a little bit just enough for this age period that we're shooting for here, of the, you know, the teenage angst period. So I'm glad they didn't shy away from that. Otherwise, it would have been a little bit too cheesy. Best part of the movies, did I mention there was a katana that he pulled out of his chest?
Yes.
Because that was really cool.
Didn't he also get a katana put through his chest at one point before he uses one up?
Yeah, and then he got a second katana. I mean, three katanas really in his chest, so trifecta.
It's a very katana-heavy movie.
At least the end.
So for me, I love the video game aspects of it. I think it could have used more katanas. It only had three. We need at least a dozen to make it really work. In all seriousness, it's a fun movie. It was enjoyable. It's a little slower at parts, but in general, I have no big problems with the movie. Now that it's been over a decade since the movie came out, and they've tried doing a TV show about it, should they remake this movie and bring it back?
No.
Yeah, I agree. I think
there's too many good stories out there. Again, I'm just going to put my little piece in there. Founding the Heroic Awards, which is honoring exceptional renderings of independent creators. And when we're honoring the heroes who are our writers, why do we need a Scott Pilgrim 7, 8, 9, or whatever? There's so many good stories out there in our world's zeitgeist that we're losing because we're not pulling them away from the small corners that are our neighborhoods and our online communities. We need to pull them into our lives and read more of these amazing ideas that people have, you know, waking up in the middle of the night, sweating with weird dreams and then writing about it. We need to experience those with the writers. And doing Pilgrim again, fine, but I'm not going to watch it. I'm not going to watch Scott Pilgrim number 3. I'm going to look for those more indie comics, more indie games, more indie movies that Halloween time, like you said right now, Halloween time, there's so many great indie horror and thriller movies. Look what just happened with, is it Caddo Lake by M. Night Shyamalan's production company?
Oh, yeah. It's on HBO, right?
Yeah. It's PG-13. I like M. Night Shyamalan, but guess what? He didn't write this piece. It was some indie creators that popped up a few years ago in Sundance or what have you. And this movie is absolutely epic. You know, they could have just gotten on Scott Pilgrim number 4, or they could have done Caddo Lake with a new indie creator. I just say, let's focus on the new people and get some great stories in our world.
Yeah. Also, the original source material is pretty much covered with this, right? There's not another 10 books of the series that goes farther. It's a self-contained story. Because it is kind of filmed the way it is, and it does have that retro graphic kind of tied everything. You're right, Chris. I think it will get more and more retro with time, but I think that's a good thing. I think it will make this last much longer. It's also still so new that I hate to even think about a remake for it, but I know there have been things that have been rebooted and remade 100 times, but I think that's because they intended to be series. I don't think this did. I think this is a one and done, and I think it's fine on its own.
And so do you think people should go out and find this movie if they haven't seen it before? If they made it this far through the podcast and spoiled on the entire plot, should they go out and see it?
Yeah, I think it's fun to watch. And again, like we kind of said, the story's a little thin, but it's fun to watch. It's a good view. And especially now that I've watched it again with a more open mind, I would definitely recommend, if you haven't seen this, giving this at least a shot as a fun afternoon movie. It's not going to change your life, but it's a good watch.
I definitely give it a 7 out of 10. It doesn't rank higher, but because of all the things we mentioned in the show, the effects, the one-liners, the cinematography, the music, the new age looking at how to do movies with this cartoon elements involved in the movie, I just think it's a solid 7, and that means you watch it.
Yeah, I think people should go look for this movie. It's if you enjoy sort of witty humor, you enjoy video games, you enjoy just light fun, it's not a bad watch. So in closing, how would you rate this movie?
I would give this the like lifting emoji thumbs up that comes up across things, but then it explodes into a bunch of coins. I do think this is a thumbs up, though. This is a well worth seeing. It's unique. There's not much else like it.
Yeah, Roger and Ebert would give it 2 thumbs up. I think definitely could have ended with Knives. I think we could have done a spinoff where they got together in the end, and it might have been an 8. In my world, she was the best character, the best actress, the best. I mean, she was awesome. She owned the screen. You guys remember back when John Wayne was on, and he'd walk onto the screen for the first scene he was on there, and the he was the movie. He was the screen at that point. That's what Knives, her character was so well done. That's what she did when she comes on. And even in the manga, when you go back and read the manga, and she's watching the band perform, her eyes turn into stars, and it's like super big, like the manga style. It's just so endearing. She kind of owns the screen. And Scott never does that. If you watch, he never really owns the screen. It's not really about him. It's about what's happening to him or what's happening around him. So 2 thumbs up, 7 out of 10. I wish they would have got back with Knives at the end.
One thing I forgot to mention about Knives, the actress that played, the reason why she was chosen was because she knew Taekwondo. So with that last fighting scene, that's all her. And she knew how to do that long before she took the role. For me, though, I'd say thumbs up with a fistful of quarters. It's a good movie. It's worth watching again. I'll probably watch it again with my kid shortly. It's fun. It's not serious, but it's enjoyable at the end of the day. So, Jeremy, I do have one mailbag, Jeremy, for you before we head on out.
Oh, man, a mailbag.
Yeah. Well, actually, this is a review that I found on Apple.
I don't think I like this, then. If it's for me, that means it's bad news.
Well, it's not for you particularly. It's for us. These hosts are a blast. They discuss pacing, casting, generally walk through each movie while providing humor. It feels like I'm listening to it and on a conversation with friends. This should be a staple for any comic book or movie lover alike. Look forward to more. 5 stars.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I was expecting something like that mumbly fat guy needs to get off the air. So that's cool. I'm much better about that.
Well, I mean, you missed last week's episode where we talked about how a great Laurie's voice cut through the traffic noise, but yours did not.
Oh, that's good. I'll take it.
So in closing, Rick, again, thanks for joining us for this evening to talk about Scott Pilgrim versus the World. But where can people find you?
I'm all on Facebook. That's the best place for sure. You can find the indie fighting game that my characters that I wrote in my comic book, that they're inside the video game called Vigilante Combat. You can get it on Kickstarter here on Halloween. It goes live. That game is so premium. Even though it has an indie fighting game title, indie game, it's absolutely pro. You have to check out the trailers for it. It's just, I can't praise it enough. 15 thumbs up for that one for sure. But also, in the spring coming up, we have Heroic Awards Season 2. We just had Season 1 that ended here back in the spring at C2E2, where we had our launch for our first annual. We had several hundred entrances. We had 100-plus judges. We are a legit indie comics award ceremony. And watch for that, again, also on Facebook. You can find me at Heroic Awards and Vigilante Combat. And Zuckerberg is getting all the money. I guess that's how it goes.
And we'll make sure all those links are available in the show notes as well as on our website as well. So if people are looking for them, there's a guest tab on movie-smash.com. So go take a look at all those there. And Jeremy, where can people find you?
Well, as always, you can find me at retrovania.net. We do a podcast 5 times a month on retro video games. So this made a lot of sense. And for subtastics.bandcamp.com for all new Subtastics recordings. We're going back to the studio this winter. So look forward to some new tracks. And of course, here every 2 weeks, more or less.
This is really your biography we've been watching for this show today. So for me, you can always find me at Off Panel Creations. We're always building some piece of nerdy furniture over there. I want to thank our listeners for spending some time with us. If you have any thoughts on Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and how they need to make it into a trilogy, or how I just don't understand this movie at all, send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
But no, actually, I'm very simple. The song is about how much I don't like bacon.